Welcome one, welcome all to episode 220 of the Xbox Expansion Pass, recorded on Saturday, March 23rd, 2024. I'm your host, Luke Lore, the Insipid Ghost, joined by my co-host, the Intrepid, Captain Logan. And in this episode, we are discussing our time with Dragon's Dogma 2, along with their not-quite-shadow-dropped microtransactions that are causing quite the uproar. There's also an upcoming Captain America and Black Panther outing, Marvel 1943, The Rise of Hydra, that dropped their trailer. As always, we hope you enjoy the show. Logan, we like to start the show by offering words of kindness, those who have made our gaming weeks better. But first, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, and I'm also bad. It's been an interesting week. I took time off to go sailing this week because it was the 6th anniversary of Sea of Thieves. And the one thing that I don't like doing is the hourglass. It's the PvP. It's the 1v1 kind of, you know, matchup between a ship versus a ship. Mm-hmm. And the matchmaking has really bummed me out because it's been broken most of the week. And mm-hmm. I really wanted to dedicate myself to working on that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time that you go in and it just kicks you back out to the outpost, it's such a bummer. But outside of that, I've been playing Dragon's Dogma 2, mm-hmm. And watching the Halo Infinite series now, since it's all out.
Well, and, Halo Infinite or the Halo series?
Halo series. I always think of Infinite because that's just like
it's in your mind, yeah.
State of the game, which that Battle Pass, by the way, is hot. I like that. That's good. That Battle Pass that they got going on. I don't think I'll get anything from it, but I did like the pieces from there. But yeah, outside of the Halo TV series on Paramount and Dragon's Dogma 2, they've been very positive things. So got some comics this week. But how about you?
It's been a rough week because I was obviously very sick last week and I only got worse after we recorded. But as of last night, I got a first full night of sleep and I've been doing better. Nice. I think you can hear my voice. I sound better than I did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting there. My kids were wonderful this week. They did a fantastic job at school, testing and really working hard. I saw tons of growth in my students. So I had a good week on that front. I was beyond proud of my kids this week. So I know a couple of them listened, but it was really, really cool to see them. And so they're in my words of kindness, and I will usually we do like one small topic and then our words of kindness. I want to drop my words of kindness real quick now. Right. Shout out to my students who are crushing it lately. Really proud of them. But also I'm seeing Baron J and Fame2K from Level One Gaming out at PAX along with a number of other PAX people just taking pictures and having a blast. And they have really been brightening my day. And so shout out to them. Awesome to see those PAX pictures.
Oh, man. The PAX pictures have been great. I love seeing the folks like getting together and meeting up. We got to see Suddy and Mr. Badbit get together, and mm-hmm. you know, here's hoping that Suddy got a good left hook in for you. But you know, we can't show that on the internet.
I've been trying to get everybody that sees Mr. Badbit to fight him at PAX East.
So, you know. I love it.
Who are your words of kindness this week?
I wanted to call out Red Beast. Because I will talk about it, but Red Beast picked up a controller based off of you know, some previous research, I'm assuming, and a sale going on. Mm-hmm. But a controller review that I did, they were very interested in checking out the Turtle Beach Stealth Ultra controller, and let me know that after the review came out, they went and picked it up, and I hope that they really, really enjoy it the way that I have. Because I think it's a fantastic controller, but it was really cool to see that. It was nice to get some really good positive feedback from that review.
Yeah, that was an excellent review, and I'll encourage everybody that's listening to the show on audio, go to the YouTube channel, watch Logan's Turtle Beach Stealth Ultra review, because that is a fantastic review. That was some of your best work on XCP I've ever seen. It was incredible.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, bravo on that one, for sure, man. We'll talk more about the Stealth Ultra and your experiences in that later in the show. And yeah, we're going to talk more later in the show about our time in Dragon's Dogma. I'm 20 plus hours in on that. I got to review it a bit early, which has been a blast. I've had some issues as well, so I'm anxious to talk about that. But before we talk about the game proper, I'd like our starter topic this week to be controversy that's come from the result of microtransactions in Dragon's Dogma 2. This was, I think, an interesting one because after reviews dropped, and the reviews for Dragon's Dogma 2 have been excellent. The average Metacritic is around an 89 at the time of this recording. Again, we'll talk about that when we talk about our experiences, but largely quite positive on Dragon's Dogma 2 across the board. And I would say the same. However, we're seeing Steam reviews and a number of people going out and review bombing this game because, after reviews dropped and once the game went live, microtransactions went live in this, and it really has soured the taste for a lot of people in their excitement of Dragon's Dogma 2, particularly because Capcom is on this consistent upswing of just great game after great game, from the Monster Hunter series to Resident Evil, even their, I'll say, bloody nose in a very mild way of... oh my gosh, Exo Primal, yeah, which again, I had a blast in for that time we played it.
Fun, silly game.
Yeah, fun, silly game. But Capcom has been firing on all cylinders. And to see Dragon's Dogma make this grand return that so many people wanted has been interesting because it's now marred by this controversy of microtransactions. And Jampack Sam wrote on Threads, and I pulled his thread off. He wasn't even necessarily like making a question for the show, but he was kind of in a thread with me on Threads. He said, reading up on the situation, I didn't see anything too horrendous about them. He's speaking of the microtransactions. Definitely would rather not have them in a big single player game, but they might not be as gross as the internet is making them out to be. Now, what's interesting about this, Logan, is, pardon me, Dragon's Dogma 2 launched after, you know, reviews had gone live. Reviews went live the day prior. I was included in that, in getting an early copy. I'm 20 plus hours in, having a great old time. It was in the review guide that there would be microtransactions. And I gave you a link so you could see on your end, because it's a review guide. We're embargoed on certain stuff, not able to show stuff. But it was in the review guide. And I include myself in the failing of this, not taking the proper time to see and read through every little bit proper, but it was in there in bold that there would be microtransactions here. And I found that interesting because all the controversy happened when the game launched, and in the reviews that I saw and caught, that wasn't a talking point, including myself, right? Like I was surprised by the inclusion of these microtransactions, and yet it's largely fallen on me. I didn't do my due diligence when looking at the guide they sent us to review the game. So I thought that was interesting, and I wanted to hold myself accountable, but also call out other reviewers who maybe didn't inform their audiences as well as they should. The part that's interesting about this is you can buy stuff like fast travel points and crystals to purchase new pawns in the game, which are an integral part of your experience. You can also revive dead NPCs with stones in the game, and you can purchase those things with real world money. They're also very much found easily in-game for anyone that puts a minimal amount of time in there, which begs a number of different questions in there. But I wanted to invite you to comment before we read Rob Frawley's question as well.
Yeah, this was interesting because I did pick it up on PC. And when I installed it, I noticed that there was in Steam, they have this section that is for like add-ons. And I notice it when I play like Sea of Thieves, it'll show me like all the bundles and stuff that I can buy for that. And I think, okay, well, that's all Emporium stuff. I'm aware of that. But then I started to see like these 500 Rift crystals, 1500 Rift crystals, 2000 or 2500 Rift crystals. And I was like, what is this? I thought this game was single player. What's going on? And I looked into a little bit of the discussion online. I started to notice people were really upset about these microtransactions. And yeah, you know, I did a little bit of digging, you know, kept started scrubbing through all the comments, and some of the comments that I kept seeing were things like, you can earn all this in game, you don't have to buy it. And I'm like, okay, all right, that feels like Helldivers. Helldivers has microtransactions. You can buy super credits for cash in Helldivers, and you can use that to unlock the premium war bond passes. But if you don't want to, you can find the super credits in game, and you can find a fair amount. Like, I'm sitting on a pretty hefty stack, just thinking about like the stuff that you can buy in the store if you want.
Same. That's, I actually bought the latest war bond in Helldivers from all super credits I'd found in the game.
Yeah. It's real very, yeah, very, very doable. Like, I haven't spent an additional, I have the money that I would have spent on like microtransactions for that game went to buying a copy of the game for a buddy. Like, that's where I figured, okay, I don't have to buy any of these credits to get these passes. If that's the case, then my support's going to be going to give them another customer. Same thing with this. I looked at the list and I was like, you know, $2 to redo my character would be nice. It'd be nice if I could do that in game. And then I went and checked it. Yeah, I can do it in game. I just have to save the gold. And if that's the case, then fine. I'll just save the gold. I'll just look at my slightly ugly character that I realized, like, I'm, as someone who doesn't have like face blindness, but has a really hard time recognizing faces, I recognize I probably shouldn't be tweaking stuff in character editors anymore. Like, that's just a bad idea. Mm-hmm. But I can see why people are mad about this, man. People want to just play like one of the benefits of getting a single player game is you don't have all this BS. So to see that, it's like, I get where people are coming from.
Right.
Also, it's easy enough to ignore. Right. But I do think that a lot of people probably should have called it out more in the reviews, because mm-hmm. it definitely didn't seem like something that was, it seemed like they were just like, hey, don't pay attention to this.
Mm-hmm. It did not feel like something that was added after the fact, like some games we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
That is to say, it's in the review guide. Like, it was acknowledged ahead of time. There are some games that have added that in the aftermath. After reviews go live, then they add those things. I wish in this moment I had an example at the top of my mind, but I wonder if there's, you would mind reading Rob Frawley's comment here.
Yeah, there's been some things out there that have done that's kind of messed up. But Rob Frawley sent in a question or a comment over on Twitter, thanks to our patrons over there. It says, I'm happy you're enjoying DD2. And I don't want to take anything away from your experience, but microtransactions are a legitimate concern. It isn't, quote unquote, review bombing to describe displeasure with such practices or to be unhappy with its suboptimal PC performance.
He's referring in the suboptimal portion. There are a number of people having problems with the PC version of the game.
That's what I have to take away from this, because I have been playing this on the Steam client and I have not had any issues with it. I've had a really high frame rate. I've had everything bumped up to max on my settings. I have not run into any weird crashes or hitches. I'm also running on very strong hardware at the moment. So it could just be that the problems that they're running into are things that are coming from the fact that they just have older hardware, which was not optimized for, which is a bummer, because there's, you know, that's the whole point of having PCs is to be able to have a breadth of range between hardware that's acceptable, and usually minimum specs are much lower than what most people have. So they shouldn't be running into major issues with that. So it's kind of a bummer, but I definitely don't think that review bombing a game is going to do anything outside of make people question why this game is touted by critics and then review bombed by consumers.
So that's interesting. I don't know that I agree with you, but I don't know that I can disagree either. The review bombing aspect is, I think, a really good way for users to make themselves heard.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very key element of it. When it's in a client that you have to have purchased and played the game in order to do that, right?
Yeah.
Expressing displeasure means voting with your wallet, at least in my mind. And so expressing displeasure, review bombing, calling out microtransactions in a way that where they are not well received is important. So I'm not bothered by that. And I do think it is a concern, but not a heavy one based on the nature of Dragon's Dogma 2. As an industry trend, it's been here for years. I think the lack of attention that's been on it in Dragon's Dogma 2's case is concerning. I think the problem that much of this is available in-game and locked behind time gates, a time of like you must play the game, is maybe a problem, but also you're supposed to play the game. If you want to change your character, earn the gold for it, play the game. Right. Yeah. Like that's part of it. We cannot, like, I'm working on my battle pass in COD right now. We have not been putting our time into COD. We've been putting it into other places, Helldivers, right?
Yeah.
So I'm behind. I may not finish that battle pass that I purchased myself. Should I be mad at Call of Duty for that? I've not put in the time to play the game. So there's I think a little bit of finger pointing, you know, at wanting out on time invested in a game.
Two things that I wanted to address. One that's very, very present. If you want to finish your battle pass in Call of Duty and you have been skipping out on paying attention to it for a long time, you can buy tiers of the battle pass to get the rewards that you want. It's fast tracking the battle pass in compensation for time versus money. It's always what it's come down to for that is you buy time by buying tiers and you can jump yourself forward. That's exactly what this is.
Agreed.
This is you saving time by buying things that will expedite the process, buying a journey pack to give you better equipment at the start of the game, buying stuff to be able to afford better pawns, things like that. That's exactly what this is. If you don't like that, play the game naturally. You're not forced to do that. I'm not forced to buy tiers in Call of Duty because I have been working on that. And I have been like setting aside time to make sure each week that I'm going in and grinding out, you know, matches to get my battle pass up so that I will finish it without having to actually worry about the tiers or buying tiers to get up to that goal, right? That's what this is. The other thing that I wanted to touch on too was the review bomb aspect of it. When people are purposefully going out of their way to go and review bomb something because of the microtransactions and giving it a really bad score because of the microtransactions, that's where I have a problem, because they're not accounting for the rest of the game. They're just going in and saying, I hate microtransactions, so I'm giving this a 1-star. That's not fair to the actual game. If you want to give it a 6 out of 10 because of the microtransactions, but acknowledge that there's still a really good game there, fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine, because at least that's a measured, non-binary approach to how these games actually are. Is it a really good game? Yes. Is it plagued by the fact that they are giving you fast track microtransactions as bait to not play the game as much as you want to? Yes.
Plagued? I didn't find them egregious in my 20 some odd hours, mind you.
Fair. I didn't even know they were a thing until I actually opened up the Steam store. Like if you told me that they were in game, I can't find them.
Same. At least I haven't yet.
Yeah.
So I didn't think it was like in your face. Like some Ubisoft games, the store is like, bam, right there.
Yeah. You know, like Helldivers, they point you at it. There's a big button at the top of your menu or the top of your HUD that's like, hey, go to our store. This is the store. By the way, did you know that the store is right here? Did you want to go spend medals in the store? Because that's where the medals go.
Mm-hmm. It's also like talking about review bombing. When Suicide Squad launched, Wired and a couple other like legitimate outlets that are factored in on Metacritic were giving the game ones because of the Sweet Baby controversies, or this game is acknowledging or not acknowledging certain political stances, emotional stances, representation stances. That's also not fair or not indicative. That's just as, in my mind, childish, because you're not representing the game as a whole. You're not showing what the product the developers created as an experience overall to inform a consumer. But I also agree in some ways, it's a way to be heard.
It is, but I honestly, like, and I'll shout out Scott Johnson, who does podcast, who's been doing podcasting for years. Because of the microtransactions and his discontent with that thing, he refunded his purchase of Dragon's Dogma 2 before playing it, because he is adamant about how he feels about microtransactions, and he made a statement about it, and he got flack for that. And I'm like, that's a consumer decision. Yeah. If you don't stand by the principles that are these things, and you don't appreciate that those are in this thing that you're mm-hmm. buying, don't buy the thing. Acknowledge mm-hmm. that you will miss out on this and stand to your morals. Don't buy the thing and then give it a 1-star review after playing 2 hours because you hate microtransactions. Mm-hmm. That's not fair to the people that are looking for an honest review of a game who have no intention of buying microtransactions.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And a quick correction to myself. I said Suicide Squad. I meant Hogwarts Legacy. People giving Hogwarts Legacy a 1. On a political stance or an like some sort of social investment, as opposed to rating the game as it deserves to be rated. And I find that frustrating. And to that point of the gentleman you mentioned, standing by your position and being strong in your convictions and making a statement on it is totally within your right. It's like the people that are like, we're boycotting Call of Duty, we're boycotting Hogwarts. It's like, I don't think you did, you know?
Yeah.
Looking at the numbers, it's very silly.
It's one thing to say that you're going to do something, and it's one thing that you're going to jump on that and stuff like that, but be consistent about those. If you are going to do that, I appreciate more when people are consistent about their uprisings or their consumer choices. Like, a lot of the stuff that I do and I like to call out my hypocrisies because of fandoms. So if there's ever a time where I'm adamant that I'm against one thing and you catch me doing it somewhere else, I will always welcome that call out, because it's one of those things. It's like, I can explain why I feel this way about this one and why this one. It's a spectrum, folks. We always have to live within the gray, because nothing is going to be black and white. And I hate when I see things like review bombs, because that feels very black and white. Like, you can have your voice heard. There's plenty of places to do that. I appreciate that consumers have that, but you have to take into account the fact that there's an actual game here too.
Agreed.
But that's my opinion. I know we've gone on so long about this. I feel like we've completely let down the patron callouts.
Yep. We tend to get excited in our first topic, but that tends to happen. So let's take a moment and shout out those that keep this show going, that help us keep the lights on, that hopefully allow us to travel and meet one another. Those are the people that went to patreon.com/Xbox Expansion Pass. In a time when we know monies are tight, in a time we know people are being asked to pay for content and in every number of ways, but it really does help us in so many ways. Even if you're dropping just $3 at the lowest tier, I cannot tell you how much it really has changed the quality of this show. The softwares that I have to purchase to keep the show going and improve, it makes the most difference. So thank you. We appreciate you. I'm going to go ahead and read our tier 2 and 3 shout outs for this week. They are Chris 1H1D, Nicholas Johnson, Eloy Woods Parker III, Nicholas Downey, Rob Frawley II, Tao Zochi, Xbox Skittle, Meadow 1606, Randall Thor 19, Silkenet, Rick Gaffney, African aka Charles Jones, Game Positive, Jam Pack Sam, Matt Valdez, Neo Prime 33, Rick Davis, Red Beast, Xbox Mike 29, The Lord Sir Master, All Father, Provider of Family Values, and Attendee of PAX East, James Suddy, Brendan Myers aka The Winter Gamer, Sony's VP of Marketing, Kevin Butler, Clint Gooms, DJ Hero, and Dano 12. Thank you guys for helping keep the lights on, the content coming, and really allowing us to do what it is we enjoy and grow the show in the best of ways. All of you guys are eligible to be, every patron rather, is eligible to be on our monthly Patreon show, the Xbox Wrap-Up. I just put out the free version to YouTube from last month. Fun fact, it was supposed to say February 2023. For some reason, it says January still. Oops. And I did a cool layout where it's like the black is the Xbox controller, and then each person's box is the color of the buttons. No one understood it. I was bummed. But if you want to be on our March episode, jump in on our Patreon soon, and we are recording that, I believe, next week or just a few days after that. So, Logan, we talked all about Dragon's Dogma in terms of the microtransactions, but we've not talked about the quality of the game, something that I cannot say enough good things about. This is on my Game of the Year list. It joins Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, and Helldivers as being a Game of the Year candidate thus far. Really, really appreciative. I was able to get a review code for purposes of reviewing it early. You just purchased it on PC, so we have different amounts of time in there. But I have found myself truly loving this game, despite some frustrating gripes that I think are very noticeable in my experience that don't detract the fact that it's a Game of the Year candidate. How much have you played so far?
I've got about 5 hours into it. This is an odd game. Playing on PlayStation, playing on PC, I've had a really good experience with the frame rate, which is what the thing was that I was going to rub up against. And after watching videos of people running around in towns and stuff at less than 30, mm-hmm. I am so glad that I picked this up on PC because, man, it is crisp and it is smooth. It doesn't look nearly as crisp as I would say like Cyberpunk does. Like Cyberpunk just has like this sharpness to it that just feels so good. Whereas Dragon's Dogma 2, it feels like there's like a weird fuzziness around textures and people that regardless of setting, I can't fix. And I just attribute it to the fact that that is the game. But
I'll say on Series X frame rate, I absolutely notice it.
Yeah.
But like most 30 frame per second games, my brain adjusts and I move on. I do notice it, but
yeah.
Gotham Knights, Starfield, every other fantasy game that's ever come out ever.
Yeah.
I see it. I acknowledge it. It's there. I notice it when I jump to other games that are 60 or 120, mm-hmm. but it did not bother me. It did not detract from my experience.
Interesting. It's definitely like going back to Starfield and stuff and playing it on PC versus Xbox. I definitely prefer to have the 60, man. Like it's just a different world for me. It just feels smoother. As someone who likes VR but can't do much VR, you know, when you have those weird dips in frames, it triggers like a response in my brain that's just like, ugh, you're gonna be sick. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, man. I've been having a heck of time with this. I got stuck on a mission where I had to combine two things mm-hmm. to create like a thing. And I get that it was like it was an opening tutorial, but I'm having a heck of a time trying to understand this game. Like I genuinely have it. Like I've had to try and like attribute it to like, oh, okay, this is like World of Warcraft, but you have to, your pawns are like NPCs that are like the tank, healer, and DPS. So just try and find that mix and go with it as if it's like a World of Warcraft game. And I'm like, okay, I can kind of understand that. But even now I'm like thinking like, okay, I need to ditch the rogue and get another sorcerer or like some other magic casting thing. Cause I went up against a couple slimes in some water and dude, it took forever. The one mage I had was doing all the work and the other characters were just standing around not doing anything. And I'm like, this is painful.
Right. I will say, when it comes to the amount of systems in the game, it's exceptionally high and it is a lot of input to immediately kind of be thrown into. There's a lot of, and I know the joke here is, you know, Luke doesn't like reading when it comes to video games. I don't like reading when it comes to video games, and there's a lot to have to learn, particularly if you are new to Dragon's Dogma. Now, I don't think that is a problem, particularly in the fantasy RPG space, the action RPG space, anywhere where you're trying to have this deeply intricate system, group of systems working together. And Dragon's Dogma has a lot of them because you can take so many vocations, which are your classes. You can mm-hmm. take so many hybrid vocations and you can solve problems in the game in such a diverse way. One of the biggest benefits to Dragon's Dogma 2 is how many how the world exists dynamically. For example, I was battling a Cyclops and I was fighting it on a kind of near a bridge, and I kited it, my pawns, and I brought it towards the bridge and then rammed it and knocked it off into the water. Well, in the story, canonically, the water, if you step beyond kind of knee deep, brine starts to come up and drag you down and kill you in game. Yeah. We knocked the Cyclops into the water and the brine defeated it for us. There are also a number of instances where you can engage in battle with these massive monsters, or you can like slide your way around them, sneak up a hill and knock boulders down to kill them instead. There are a lot of ways. I was battling a giant werewolf looking creature at one point, and then a griffin came in and attacked me, but then the creature attacked the griffin and they began battling. We were near a town, so townsfolk started running out trying to defend the town against these two monsters that were having this big kaiju level battle outside the town, and we were all fighting that. Those things exist dynamically in the world and happen a lot, which is really cool. To me, that's what sets it apart from a number of other games. I love those instances. That's the magic of a game like this. The downside being to have all those systems in play, it's a lot to deal with. And my biggest frustration, I think I put it in one of our notes so far, is missions that are in conflict with one another. You can take multiple missions on at a time. Well, I have a mission where I have to infiltrate a castle to free a politician. And then I have another mission where I need to infiltrate the same castle as part of a masquerade. And I have to go in. And then there's another part of a mission where I have to infiltrate the castle and get information out of a character's offices, a magistrate's office. And because this game is setting up each of these missions to exist dynamically, they will butt into one another. NPCs will do things that don't help one mission, but help another. And they damage the ability to solve these problems. So it's a lot to try and figure out. And my in-game hour counter is much lower than my 20 plus hours because I've lost and had to go back to old saves to try to do it the way the game seems to intend for me to do it. And I don't know that that's the same as save scumming. Like, I'm not trying to save scum, but all these systems in play, they do butt into each other early on, at least in my time. But that's not something I'm seeing a lot of reviewers discount it for, which again is a testament to the magic of Dragon's Dogma.
That's interesting. See, I haven't really run into that a whole lot. The worst thing that I've run into was there's like a fatigue system built in so that if you haven't rested at an inn for a while, like you just, your cap on your health just has like it slowly goes down. So you can't heal more than that fatigue level. Mm-hmm. I got to the point where every time I was trying to get to a town, and every interaction that I was getting into, it would down like a couple of my pawns, and I'd have to go and try and get them up and stuff, and we could kill them. But then it was like, okay, you took even more fatigue. There was a point where we were just running on nothing, and it was like just a last ditch effort. And I kept having to reload and reload and reload after we'd wipe to try and get to a town and just get little inch by inch to get to that nearest inn to be able to rest, to get like full health. And I'm like, I do not like that system. Like, agreed. That is such a punishing system for me.
I ran into that early on as well. It does get better with time, which again, would make sense, right, as you level up. But I do know what you're talking about, and I was frustrated by similar things. We're offering critiques right now. We'll also get back to the amazing stuff about it too. The maps in cities are also difficult to navigate. Finding out where you can fix your health, where you can go to do certain things, is a bit frustrating. I was perturbed by that. I've had instances where missions are saying they're active, but there's no way to do it. One of them being to find a shadowy figure that's like stalking you. Well, I've seen it multiple times. I've chased him down. I've done all the things I'm supposed to do. But then at one point in one of the saves, he fell into the water and that same brine killed him. So I had to go back, reload, but now he's not showing up. And it's like, wait a minute, but the mission's still active. So is this mission null and void? Can I not do it? Am I waiting X amount of days? Do I need to go sleep at the inn another 10 times? But then I feel like I'm damaging my game experience because I'm, you know, when you sleep at the inn, you're waiting till the next morning. Does that matter? And how much time in game it takes you to finish something?
Yeah.
Those things happen and are frustrating. And then, and I'm just going to knock my frustrations with the game out of the way so we can talk about how much we love it. A Dragon's Dogma staple is a weird, funky, annoying camera in combat, because you climb on these kaiju level enemies that are big and bad and awesome. Mm-hmm. And the camera gets all kind of wonky when you do, or when you're battling multiple enemies, it gets real wonky. That's still there. That was there in Dragon's Dogma, in Dark Arisen, and now in Dragon's Dogma 2. It's all still there, which is annoying and frustrating.
Interesting.
Okay. It's caused me to put the game down a couple times, and I'd rather go work on a battle pass or do something lower stakes. But that doesn't mean I don't want to go back and play more. Like, I anticipate finishing this game, but I do not find myself going back desperately to it the way I have in, with other games, even Starfield, which is odd because I think this is a better game. Strange.
That's interesting. So, yeah, like I haven't run into the camera thing because for me at least, like with mouse and keyboard, the camera is like constantly wherever I want to just move it. So it's been very free. It feels very natural. Mm-hmm. I even grabbed a controller just to kind of like, I actually think this game is better on controller. I'm not going to lie. I haven't set up the key binds the way I want them on my mouse and keyboard yet, which I think is part of the problem. But I edited the way that the layout is on controller, and it feels a lot more like a traditional action RPG. Like I've got like right trigger is my shoot, but like jump is now on B, grab is on Y, interact is on A. Like it feels a lot better if you go in and actually tweak a lot of the settings on that. If you're used to other games that are just more action RPG like or action adventure like.
Okay.
But I didn't run into any issues with that. One of the things that I'm still trying to like wrap my head around is a lot of the quest systems. Cause you'll find like little exclamation marks on the map, but I can't figure out how to trigger that quest. And I don't know if it's a time-based thing where it's like during the day or during the night. But there was like the first time I ran into this was where I had to talk to a dude at an inn at night. And I was like, oh, so I was there all day and I was like, I can't figure out who to talk to about this. And I don't understand it. And it's like, I know they said it at night, but they didn't just give me the thing that I like about Cyberpunk where they're like, hey, sit on this bench and wait for the appropriate time. And it's like, if they had had something like that, I'd be like, oh, okay, all right, we'll just sit here and wait till night.
So here's the part that you're going to get annoyed with. That does exist. You need to find a bench and sit on it, but it doesn't do it at your mission spot. It's nearby. Also, for anyone that's jumping into Dragon's Dogma, those exclamation marks will show up on your in-game map if your pawns point out things like ladders, or if your pawns know about... So cool thing about the pawn system, and I'll come back to the ladders. The pawns, you create these non-sentient but sort of sentient NPCs that traverse to other players' worlds, and you hire them for yourself. When they go to other players' worlds, they gain the knowledge that player has done. For example, I have a pawn in my party from somebody else's game that I pulled in who has done the quest that I'm doing, and so she will guide me to where I need to go. Follow me, sir. I'll take you where you need to go, and I follow her, and she helps me find stuff. If we're walking in the wilderness and a pawn has discovered a chest out in the wilderness, hey, look over here. There's a chest from that pawn's experience with another person's party. That's dope. The annoying part is when they add things to your map that you don't need. I don't need to climb that. And they'll keep saying, go climb this ladder. There's a chest up there. Don't need to. Not interested. Not what I'm doing. And it overwhelms the HUD with information.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a frustration point.
That was something that I was like, because there's a early mission where you have to get supplies for someone for a camp. And one of the items is very straightforward, is just grab these little mushroom whatevers. The other one is like, grab multiple things and then you have to combine them in your inventory like it's Resident Evil and you're trying to make green herbs. I didn't know that was a function. So I'm sitting here running around these two yellow circles on the map like, I can't find this thing. I know what it's called, but I can't find this thing. And my pawn kept being like, I know where these are, sir. I can go around and we can have these. I was from another world and I know exactly. Follow me. And she just keeps running around. And I'm like, when are you going to point to the thing that I actually need?
Right. Right. Yep.
So that was a fun 20 minutes.
Consistently does that type of thing happen. And it is frustrating. It is frustrating. Yeah. I think a lot of people will be overwhelmed and frustrated by it, but surprised at how much, as much as that frustration exists, you can get away from it and just have a good time. There were times where I was like, screw my missions. And I just went out and explored the world, fought things, leveled up. I'm enjoying that. I think there needs to be a lot of cleanup in UI and in the acquisition of missions and what we're doing. But there's so much to love and enjoy. I feel like this is a game that, like every game nowadays, as they take in player feedback and patch and update and change, they'll be able to refine a bit here and there. There is very much the Dragon's Dogma formula of old, and it shows. Like, this still feels like a 360 game in structure. Not in appearance, but in structure. pardon me. I love the world. I think that the cities look brown and drab, but you go into that wilderness and the waterfalls and the greens and the lush and the monsters, and it is beautiful and incredible. Yeah. And there's a feeling that permeates that world in the best of ways. So I think this is a great video game, and I recommend it. Like, for any of my gripes, they should give you pause. If you know me and you know the types of games I like and don't like, then that should help inform your decision. But anybody that is interested in purchases, I think your money is going to be very well spent here, for sure.
I was tempted to return it pretty early on, but yeah, well, because the whole, like, all the different systems that they have are so convoluted that it's just, sometimes that stuff is just a little beyond my care. Mm-hmm. Not that I can't understand it. It's just, I just don't care. And I see the articles or the videos out there. They're like 13 things you should know going into Dragon's Dogma 2. And it's like, I don't want to watch those, because I don't want to force myself into a situation where I can't work it out on my own. Mm-hmm. But I did find it very interesting, because one of the things that I think I always heard from people that was like negative feedback was how in Halo's 5, you have your team of people that you force, or you tell silver team to go out and do something, and you command them to go do things. And that was always like the thing that people were always rubbing up against in Halo. It's like, just let me play as Master Chief. I don't want to command silver team. Just, let me go and play as Master Chief. And in this one, that's kind of how I feel. 'Cause I'm like, man, I kind of want to just be the archer and just go out and do this on my own. And it's like taking me some time to kind of wrap my head around, no, I'm okay with this, because I have to think of it like a party, and the party is like an NPC group of World of Warcraft characters and stuff.
Right.
Although I will say, the goblins in this game, the sound clip that they have for the noises they make sound like they're ripped from Diablo 2 with the little Rakanichu kind of guys. I can't think of what they're called right now, but the imps.
Not me. Yeah. Interesting.
I find it interesting that the pawn system is what it is, and the whole Risen thing. The thing that finally kind of won me over was the political storytelling part of this. Because for a very long time, I was sitting here like, why am I in a Risen? Why does that matter? What is the point of this? And why is everyone so darn like nice to me? Like, they don't know anything about me except that I'm a Risen, and they're willing to like bend over backwards for me. And I'm like, this doesn't feel like people who are living in a medieval time, man. Like peasants and stuff were not happy. They weren't like, oh, it's a Risen. Let me do everything for you. Please come over and talk to me. It's like, I didn't know you could summon pawns. It's like, how is this? Who's feeding these pawns? Why is this such a lauded after thing? And also, why is everyone upset about dragons, but then totally fine with an Arisen being something that a dragon made? Like, I'm so confused by this world, but there's like a little hint of like Game of Thrones political intrigue that they just opened up to me. And I'm like, okay, you got me. I want to know what's going on about that.
It's very interesting to hear you come in because you're not a Dragon's Dogma fan. You played it a little bit after kind of the main, like when it was
when
a thing.
When this got announced.
Yeah. And so you went back and played the other one, but it doesn't age well. But the stuff that you're running into are staples of Dragon's Dogma. It's what makes the game special. And I think that's something that like I ran into when people were like, you don't like Skyrim. And I'm like, yeah, just because, and they're like, but that's Skyrim. And I'm like, yeah, that's not me.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a good thing to point out. I'll be interested to know a few weeks from now, how much you have ended up playing or like out of choice wanted to play. Because there's a lot to take in, right? There's a lot to kind of go through and figure out. And you're talking about problems with what makes Dragon's Dogma not Skyrim, what makes it not Kingdoms of Amalur, what makes it not Dragon Age. It's Dragon's Dogma-esque stuff. So it'll be interesting to see. And again, neither you nor I are at the 50 plus hour mark, right? Like I haven't finished the story. We haven't done an official review on it, but I still stand by this game being really, really good. I see that IGN gave it an 8, Eurogamer a 5, Game Informer a 9, GameSpot 9. Understand all of that. I also stand by all of my issues that I've had with it. I think this is going to be a game where I put it down soon and come back to it later. That's what I think is going to happen because there's a lot to take in. And sometimes I'm not there. Sometimes I'm very much there. So I'm anxious to find out what listeners who are listening to this episode, if you've purchased it, where did you get it? What system? Because I think PC versus console is a big difference in frame rate and handling those systems. But also like what's your experience with it? I would love to know that because, you know, that's for 45 minutes. We talked about either the microtransactions or our gameplay experience. You got the pawn system though is dope. I hope you explore that more, Logan, because there's a lot of cool stuff there.
I like I was thinking about it yesterday because this game's been on my mind. I genuinely think that because I'm a hunter and I've got a warrior, I absolutely love my warrior and I love my hunter. And the mage that I got, I gave up one that I loved because I can't figure out why two of my pawns are stuck at like level 2 and 4.
Whereas, they don't level up with you. Only your pawn levels up with you. The others you need to dismiss and hire new ones. So you have you and your pawn.
No,
you all level up together, and then the other two pawns that you bring in from the rift, you are to exit and bring them in. From the pawn rifts.
And I like the ones that I brought in.
So a great system in game is the pawn search system because I do not like cats in the real life at all. So any of these cat people, I'm immediately racist against. I don't want them in my party. So I search for humans every time.
Yeah.
And then I search for the abilities that I want. So I am a fighter currently, and I will always be a character in this game where I'm meleeing in some way because I just feel more comfortable doing that. So I always, my personal pawn is currently an archer for range. Mm-hmm. And then my other two pawns that I hire up, one is a thief. So she goes in with knives. The other one's a mage. So she augments our abilities and heals us. So what happens is my main pawn is always at range. I'm always going in close. And then the thief and the mage are augmenting our abilities. The thief gets fire daggers. The mage is giving us heals. And so that allows us to have this dynamic set. But as I level out of my two guest pawns, I go and I search for new people with similar abilities and aspects. It's fun, actually, because they bring with them new knowledge of the world. That's the thing, is they bring new knowledge. And then my pawn is out doing missions for other people, brings back stuff and gifts as well.
I'm so confused because there's like a add to favorites portion for these pawns. And I'm like, well, what the hell's the point of adding these to my favorite?
So that you don't lose something that you like. You go, you get rid of them, and then you hire somebody else. But you're like, you know what? I don't like what this mage is doing. I want to bring back this one. That's why.
But they're at a significantly lower. I hate this idea that I have to like give up the ones that I like. I found ones that I'm like, I really like this this person, she does exactly what I hope the next one does. And then the next one comes in and so far, you know, experience has been good. They do all the things that I wanted the other one to do as well, but they've given me like new options, but it's like, I kind of miss that other one. Like I've been traveling 5 days with that person. I was like, I'm kind of getting used to them. And now I have this new person in my thing and I'm like, I don't know.
You know, when you get frustrated with me about skill trees in Diablo.
Yes.
And I don't want to take the time to learn. I think that's what's happening to you, is like where I don't want to learn that game. I just want to go in and hack and slash and just be awesome. Probably. I think that's what's happening here, is you don't want to learn this system, which I get because it's complicated. Yeah. But I think that's what's happening, is this isn't your natural inclination.
Yeah.
Because it's not skill trees in the same way. It's not.
No, I was looking for those.
Yeah. It's not the same style. So I think that's, you're butting against your natural instincts. Mm-hmm. And the game is not meant for your natural styles. And think that's what's going on. Mm. It's a unique fantasy game. That's what makes it special. That's why people were so excited for it to be back. And if it doesn't click soon, it's not going to, I don't think.
It's starting to click. I'm thinking more about like having two melee or two physical damage, two magic damage characters. So I'm going to start looking for... I don't know what it is, but the necromancer scythe vocation, whatever that is. I want to find one of them and bring them into the party, because I think that's going to pair well against the mage that I have. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm that's kind of why I'm hoping that maybe Captain America is just going to be a very straightforward kind of action punching Nazis in the face kind of a game.
I'm in the same way, and you're alluding, of course, to the Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra trailer that just dropped. This is Amy Hennig's digs from Skydance New Media. They put out this trailer that I think looks incredible. It shows Captain America and Black Panther at odds, kind of meeting for the first time in 1943. So this is not T'Challa. This is his father. This is Cap before he goes into the ice. They're these two effective super soldiers, though not the same types, running into one another and combating each other in World War II, and essentially putting the best of Unreal 5 engine on display. But it is not gameplay, so it's a pre-rendered trailer. It looks
great. Not pre-rendered, running real time.
Thank you. I'm sorry. That is a good distinction. That's not. I didn't mean pre-rendered.
I know what you meant, though.
Not gameplay. Right.
Yeah.
It's a great trailer, I thought, but no gameplay. However, the game's coming sooner than I thought. It's coming in 2025.
Right? Dude, okay, so I want to wax poetic about this for just a hot minute, because this was something that kind of made the rounds for GDC, which is a game developer conference. And they're kind of using this as like a tech demo on purpose for Unreal Engine 5.4, which is going to be released soon. Adding more and more to like volumetric lighting, the way that the tessellation system works for being able to create different environments and stuff like that. And Amy Hennig and Skydance came out with this tech demo of what 1943 is going to look like, and then announced that it was going to be coming out in 2025. And I darn near had to change my pants, because I was like, holy shnikes, this looks really good. And it's all in engine, and it's all running real time. They can change elements on the fly as they're showing off this stuff. And I'm just like, dude, they've got the basis. They've got the foundation and the look and the style of a game that I'm very much interested in. Now, the story looks interesting. It seems like it's going to be like Captain America versus Red Skull. But then Black Panther is going to be brought into it as kind of like this third party who's also trying to stomp Red Skull because of just, you know, the invasion that the Nazis had during the World War II. And having three super soldiers effectively like in the same area, all kind of battling against each other, is such an interesting like power struggle that I'm down for. So I have no clue. Like if this turns out to be a visual novel, I'll still play it, but I'm genuinely interested in what this game is because of Amy Hennig, Skydance, the fact that they're pushing the technology with Unreal 5.4 and that this game is based around two characters that I actually three characters that I absolutely love in Marvel, Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is Red Skull, Captain America, and Black Panther. Like those, mm-hmm. the movies have sold me on those characters so well that I'm very much interested in checking out Rise of Hydra. I think it's going to be a really unique art piece of a game that will feel like a Spider-Man's version of Uncharted or Indiana Jones.
Yeah. No, I'm hopeful that whatever this is that third-person action game not bogged down by a ton of systems, not live service, because I will play almost every superhero game. With the exception of Midnight Suns, I've played every superhero game that's come out in the last few years. Despite my many qualms with Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, I'm still invested. I'm very excited for season one with the Joker. Like I put in tons of hours because I just love superheroes and I get IP focused. You know this about me. Yeah. For better or worse, game quality or not, like I loved Avengers. I loved the Arkham series. I loved Guardians of the Galaxy. Even if I have trouble with an objective review, or like I have a problem in it when I give an objective review, I still will play it nonstop. I'm excited for this game. I love the actor for Black Panther. This is the second video game iteration of Black Panther in the wake of Chadwick Boseman's passing. And the first one was Chris Judge. This one, his name escapes me, but he's from The Walking Dead and he's great. Two great iterations of Black Panther, doing a good job. I see you looking it up and I appreciate you. I'm excited for it. And Todd Oxer wrote in a great question. He said, with the amazing trailer of Marvel 1943 really making use of the Unreal Engine and making it shine, it feels truly next gen. What Xbox Series or PS5 only games do you feel have delivered a next gen experience? And I will say, not a lot. Not many. Hogwarts Legacy, Jedi Survivor, both of those games have given kind of those updated feeling of next gen only experiences. You said Carrie Payton is the Black Panther. Thank you. It really sounds good. Really looks good. Really excited for that. But next gen experiences which are very much current gen now, even with the rumors of the PS5 Pro, even with the Korean ratings board showing that there's new Xbox hardware on the way very soon. I am not excited for the PS5 Pro or the new Xbox, because I don't think we've maximized these. Now, will I get them? Again, kind of like the superhero games. Yeah, I'm probably going to play them, right? I'm probably going to check them out. That doesn't mean I can't be critical of them. I think, again, this is kind of that hypocrisy we point out in ourselves often. I don't see a ton of games that have really maximized the Series X, that have taken advantage of it. The Series X and the PS5, both to me feel like they're just improved PS4s and Xbox Ones. Like I play Spider-Man 2 or God of War, and those look like really good PS4 games. I play Starfield, and I don't see this only on Xbox Series X experience. I play Forza Horizon, and I'm like, well, I played Forza Horizon on Xbox One, and it was amazing there too. But I don't feel like I'm kicking up into these special only modern console experiences in many places, except Hogwarts and Jedi Survivor and maybe one or two others. Suicide Squad can do it, but that's more a matter of like all the things that's got in play together. I don't even feel that with Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah. It's interesting, dude. Like everyone's been kind of talking about the PS5 Pro and, you know, looking at like what I can do with a PC. And granted, I spent a lot of money on this PC. Like this PC is like three PS5 Pros easy. At this point, I'm like, I don't know that a PS5 Pro or like a new, you know, a pro version of the Xbox Series X would be enough to sway me off of the base experience. Because I'm looking at this game and this game looks like it is taking advantage of the engine to really push some beautiful games. And just given off of some of the stuff that we've seen, I mean, the sacrifices feel like it's coming down to frame rate. And it doesn't feel like anyone's really been able to optimize or create towards this hardware the way that we saw at the end of the PS4 and Xbox One era. Like Dude, the games we were getting at the end of the Xbox One and PS4 were so vastly superior than the stuff that we saw at the beginning of it. And now that we're starting to get into this kind of mid-gen refresh of the hardware, I hope that I'm wrong about this, but I'm still not really seeing anything that feels like it is this generation's value. Like I don't feel like I'm getting the value of my console right now. I feel like I'm just playing up-resed versions of these older games. And the older games that we did have on this hardware is amazing, because it's like the specs that they were shooting for were so low that it's like I can load this game in like less than two seconds. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Like, why can't all the games do this? Why do I have to sit around and wait for this? I thought we were on faster hardware.
Yep. It's very much that, like, do we need 60 frames on consoles? Yeah. Where is it? Why do we not have it?
Yes.
I can handle 30. I'm not mad at 30. I want it to be 60. But, I mean, I look at 1943 to kind of get back to the core of the question, and I really hope it delivers, but, like, I do not need a pro. All right, let me rephrase. I should not need a pro, because I don't feel like we're maximizing our potential. The last few days, apart from Dragon's Dogma, playing a lot of COD, working on those battle passes together. I love Modern Warfare 3. I don't care what anyone says. Obviously, a lot of people love Modern Warfare 3 for all that hoopla it went through. But, like, the new Halo Infinite update is out, and that game has been put into an incredible state. The networking feels great. The battle passes are awesome. The consistent improvements. There are so many maps. Like, there are so many classic Halo maps in Infinite now that it's more than the Master Chief Collection. It just, all these old community-made maps in Forge that have been refined and kind of honed out by 343, it's incredible. The Master Chief team is now on Infinite, and it shows. Like, Infinite is in a great place. It's a little too late, but it's an Xbox.
It's what it should have been.
It's what it should have been, yes. Too little, too late, but it is what it should have been. It is fun. It is a blast. And I got to say, like, I'm happy with a lot of my Xbox experiences, but I understand where people are frustrated at the lack of making it feel like this gen is the GOAT and should be the GOAT. We've got all these great services, back compat, everything loads quickly, so many awesome things, but there's no like one visual showcase game. Maybe that's Hellblade. I don't blame COVID for this stuff. I think we're past the point of blaming COVID on things. I just want to see why we need to have an Xbox. And like, did you see the consoles are sales are down kind of across the board in Europe, but down 47% for Xbox? Yeah. Like, is that because we didn't go exclusive? Is that because you can now play Hi-Fi Rush or Sea of Thieves is coming? I don't know what it is, but it's something is changing.
I think a lot of it is the lack of games right now. Because
for who?
I think just triple A banger games for these consoles. I think they're currently lacking. We've seen a lot of really good double A. We've seen a heck of a lot of really cool indie stuff. And indie's going to drive the industry as far as like mechanics and design goes. Mm-hmm. Like, the indies can just play around with stuff that triple A can't. But there haven't really been any like major games this quarter to really push people to buy these consoles. And I could be forgetting something, so feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Like, we've had a really good year so far, but there hasn't been like a Starfield.
No. Power World is probably the closest thing. And we had a good comment in our last week's episode. Somebody kind of, they were worried, I think, that we were falling into like the social arguments of Power World versus Helldivers. And that's not what we were doing. But Power World's the only big hit for Xbox. Helldivers is a surprise hit for PlayStation. And like, the big games that put the systems on display are Suicide Squad, which does push your system. Like, the game looks great. Its traversal is incredible. It's fast. There's a lot of things going on in there. But, like, do you people want to play it? No. Is it selling? No. So do you need a system to play that? No. Right? Like, there's that stuff is consistently popping up. And should you be wanting to play, or should you be buying a system to push? How do I rephrase this? none of them are pushing your hardware in the must-have experiences. Helldivers doesn't push. You don't need a PS4 Pro. Helldivers isn't doing that. And no, nothing is selling consoles right now for any reason. In fact, we're reducing reasons to purchase consoles. I was purposely, maybe even the reason I kind of fumbled, I was checking out, by design, Modern Warfare Mobile just now, just to see. This is a console. This is like a near console experience with a backbone. It's great. Do you need a console now? Like, do you? You can play on xCloud. You can play on PC. A lot of the games are no longer exclusive. You're playing near console experiences on your phone. We know that Resident Evil 4 can be played on an iPhone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Do you need a console? That's why I told you I was going to do this. I was going to pull up mobile while we talked in this window of time. Do you need a console?
I would say that there's an interesting conversation to be had around like the future of consoles and where that's in, because they are effectively the entry point for PC players. Mm-hmm. You're going to be buying a PC, but it's going to be like a $500 PC. And people typically use their PCs for a lot more than just games. So it makes me wonder, you know, like, are you going in because you like the features that the console brings or the aesthetics of the actual console itself? Mm-hmm. Is that where your digital library is? Is that like, and when you start to break down some more of those barriers around that and say like, okay, well, you can use your controller wherever you want. Mm-hmm. Those features are available in other ways, or the library is accessible through multiple apps. Like mm-hmm. a lot of people have been talking about rumors going around about an Xbox handheld. Nothing that I really want to talk about till I start to see some concrete evidence of something actually happening around that. Mm-hmm. But the idea of needing an Xbox handheld would be cool. But when I look at it, I'm like, you know, we have pretty good hardware out there right now that can do everything that the Xbox, you know, app can provide mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah.
But it still gives you access to like PlayStation and Steam mm-hmm. and all these other services. And it's like, why limit myself to just the one ecosystem then?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very strange. Look at the PS Portal. People love the Portal. Those Portal pals, nerds, they love it. But like, I've got my backbone on my phone. And when I hit the backbone button, it brings up all the games I can play from the Google Store, PlayStation Cloud Play, and Xbox X Cloud. And it's like, I don't need that.
I'm all right there.
I got them all right there. And better are the experiences on mobile. It's just an interesting thing. And I note that. I note that every time.
Yeah. If it's one thing I've learned about Gen Z, is they're aging a lot faster than us millennials, which
Alpha.
I appreciate.
Gen Alpha now.
Gen Alpha. Yeah, really? Sorry. Gen Alpha. I don't pay attention, kids. Gen Alpha is aging a lot older than the millennials. I don't know.
You want to know something cool? Strange about kind of Gen Alpha. So again, my kids had an incredible week. They grew. They did so many great, great stuff in school. So Friday, we wrapped up our assignments. We worked on the kids that had finished everything. And they accomplished a lot this week. And so we broke norm. It's not a norm for me. But we all cloud played Fortnite. Like a bunch of them were, they bring PS4 controllers or Xbox One controllers. Yeah. They link them to their Chromebooks and then they play Fortnite. And for 30 minutes, we did that in school, had a blast. It was a great relationship builder, community thing, but they didn't need consoles. They were logging into Fortnite on their various platforms of choice, but browsers. Yeah. And they just played and they had a great time and they were all talking and exchanging and laughing. And then we got back to work. And they didn't need a console for it. Didn't even enter their mind.
You know what's wild about this? I was talking to some folks because two of the games that I've been playing the last couple of weeks, Sea of Thieves and Helldivers, right? Mm-hmm. Both have had very serious like crashing on PC lately. Like mm-hmm. and on console as well, too. Both have been just like nope, you're not playing this game. Did you want to finish that mission? No. I went to a friend who was having trouble with it, and I was like, have you tried the browser version? Have you checked out like xCloud? Because I don't know, but maybe xCloud runs a little bit smoother and stuff. So you know, hardware seems to be hurting right now as far as some of the way some of these, and I honestly, I 100% attribute it to the devs. The devs are the ones that need to fix it. They're the ones that need to like figure out how this game is crashing and then get that remedied, because we're living in 2024, folks. I don't know what I got to do to get a console to just play a game and not have it crash. I don't know. Maybe we got to address that, but there's, I such an ignorant statement. I hate the fact that I even just said that. But it was just a real eye opener. Cause I'm like sitting here thinking like, we are still at the point where games are still having code and they're so complex and they're still getting issues where they are just crashing to desktop. And I don't see that on like browsers and mobile. And maybe it's because that's not where I spend a lot of my time. And if I did, maybe I would. But if that's the case, I would love to hear it, that is an issue across the board, regardless of where you're playing. Because right now, man, if it's, you know, same experience and I'm not running into issues with crashes, then maybe going on mobile, maybe going on browser is the way to go.
I will say I agree going on browser is the way to go for a lot of people, and that's the future for sure. Yeah. I will call out the xCloud team, who none of them listen to this. I love you guys. I wish they did, actually. But I do get frustrated because I went in to go play cloud based on a browser the other day of more Gears Tactics, which I'm back. I love Gears Tactics.
You're so weird.
I know. But Gears Tactics is a blast. I was just like, you know what, I want to play it. And I'm having a blast. You cannot play keyboard and mouse on xCloud. Did you know that?
For that game?
I thought correct. They
had support for that. Did
they controller. Do you have to have a controller on a number of xCloud
games. That seems weird. Bro, there was an update. They're like, yeah, we're bringing mouse and keyboard to xCloud. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Go try it. Tell me if I'm crazy.
All right.
Yeah, you can't do it. I was like, are you kidding me right now? A tactics game? But apparently that's a big xCloud issue. People heard it. So. All right, let's do some quick things here. I'm stoked for PDP's new guitar controller. I think that looks dope. I'm very excited for it.
Yeah. It looks like a really nice controller too. It looks like a really hot electric guitar. Mm-hmm. But it's got like the five buttons at the bottom. So if you want to like, you know, rock out on a solo, but if you just got like the regular strings up at the top for that, like, dude, I don't know where I blame Fortnite for this. I think Fortnite's the inception for bringing back plastic controllers, instruments and stuff. But dude, if Fortnite does that, I can't even think of the festival mode. Mm-hmm. If that's what brings back Rock Band, then have at it.
I will. I'm as soon as I can get that thing, I'm gonna surprise my wife. We're gonna rock out, and I'm so stoked for it. So
if you do, I want to report back, and I want you to tell me if you were able to use it in Fortnite festivals and if it made a huge difference or not.
I will. I'm not good at music games, but the idea that I could play with my wife and something she would enjoy. Yes. Yeah. Red Beast wrote in and said, do you have any particular controller keyboard setting that you immediately check or change when starting a game? My Y axis must be inverted, much to the consternation of my kids. I also can't stand Melee being tied to the right thumbstick in a first person shooter. I invert my Y axis every time because I'm a hero and a champion.
Monsters.
And that's how it's meant to be done. So I invert my Y axis every time. What about you?
I like a normal human being, do not invert my controllers because I'm not flying a plane, which I think is really the only time that that's acceptable. I'm trying to think if there's anything. I will typically map the sprint to a back pedal. I hate clicking in joysticks. I think clicking in L3 and R3 genuinely should never be used. I don't like the fact that those are. Because it interferes with two very important actual movements, which is like moving your character, or moving your camera. And anytime you have to like push in for that, it becomes an accidental input. And I hate that. Mm-hmm. So I will unmap my sprint and I will map that to a back pedal. So that way, if I want to sprint, I'm pressing a button that's intended to be pressed on a regular basis. And given that 90% of controllers right now do not have Hall effect sensors in them. Mm-hmm. They have mechanical switches. Every time I press down on the joystick, it just, in my mind, I am just grinding the gears that are already little tiny fragile pieces of plastic that are going to cause more wear and tear. And I don't want to deal with that. So I will instantly remap the sprint in melee to something else.
Gotcha. Makes sense. That makes sense. That is it for me. Did you want to talk about the Stealth Ultra at all? Point people to your review.
There's like three things that I think I would like people to take away from the review. If you don't get a chance to watch all of it, one, this is a premium priced controller. Two, it does have the Hall effect sensors in the control stick, so you won't have to worry about drift. And three, the pairing of it to other devices is more frustrating than it really needs to be. But those are like the three major things that I would probably call out. If you're looking for a new controller and you want something that is like got all of the same features as like an Elite Series 2, battery life is not nearly as good as the Elite Series 2, but it is very much acceptable. And I would say go for this because it has a little share button. And I don't know about you, I use my share button all the time. I love my share button. I love clipping stuff. I love getting screenshots for things. Mm-hmm. And the Elite Series 2 does not have a share button. So that with these back pedals that are just the two buttons as opposed to the paddles, that's a way, way more comfortable. They really need to like go with that. I know that they've got the paddles on there so that you can remove them. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to have them on there, that's fine. But the way that I have to like manipulate my middle and ring finger on the back of the controller, it cramps my hands. I don't know why, but it does. And it doesn't do that with the Turtle Beach. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Really, right. Really nice experience. Really good controller. Still some ways that they need to go with it. But top three things. Yeah. Price, Hall effect sticks. Fantastic. And then pairing is a pain.
Gotcha. Well, I hope people do go check it out because you worked hard on it, and reviews are something that we are now doing on our YouTube channel as we're able. We are two people and we both have our own things outside of here. You have another gaming podcast. And so like, it's something that we have added to our repertoire, but when we do it, we want people to be able to check it out for sure.
I also want to make sure that we do good work on it too. Like I didn't want to come into this week. I spent 10 hours with this controller and I think it's great. Go spend the money. It's like, I wanted to put like 10 times that into this controller before I felt like I'd gotten it through its paces.
Mm-hmm. And you did. Like you put 100+ hours in there, right?
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Alrighty guys. Please take a moment to go check out patreon.com/XboxExpansionPass. Find me on socials at InsipidGhost and go check out Keelhauled Podcast. Logan, let them know where they can find you.
Keelhauled Podcast is out there. So if you're interested in Sea of Thieves, now's a very interesting time to be jumping in. We just celebrated the 6th anniversary. I spent an hour reacting to the video that they put out that was like all of the stuff that's going to be coming for season 12, 13, and 14 for the rest of the year.
Which is insane, by the way. I watched that. There is so much stuff.
There's a ton of stuff. So much stuff that they're going to be doing. It's going to be wild if it all hits. But much like a chocolate cake, man, you can enjoy it. You can taste delicious, but you're going to feel sick afterwards and you're going to really, really hate those calories that you took on. Because that's the state of Sea of Thieves right now. It's like, it's really awesome, but there are some huge drawbacks.
Interesting. All right. I'm anxious to find out how people on PS4 take Sea of Thieves. Cause I think that game's going to do great there.
I can't wait to find out what people think of it. Cause it'll be a very fresh perspective that I could see being good and I could see being bad for that game.
Sure. Sure. Alrighty, guys, that's going to do it for us. Have a fantastic rest of your week. Take care. Bye.